Welcome to the 20th episode of Season 4 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday, the 22nd of November 2011, and in this episode, we're going to have another quiz, and we're going to talk about the Open Energy Monitor. Talk to the Open Energy Monitor project guys who we met at Home Camp 4. We will, of course, cover the latest news, events, bit about Ubuntu, command line love, and go over your feedback. This week, we have the morally corrupt Tony Whitmore.
Hello.
The morally corrupt Alan Pope.
Huh?
The morally corrupt Laura Cohen.
Oh, yeah.
And Mark Johnson. That's me.
Not corruptible.
I have no idea what you guys are babbling on about.
That's because you're too busy eating cake.
So, Tony, what have you been up to since the last show?
I upgraded my desktop. I did one of those. I have one of those moments where a computer was working and then I went to try and turn it on
you
again.
You touched it.
And it wasn't working anymore. It turns out it was a power supply that blew, and then I needed to upgrade some disk because I filled all that. And then in order to edit some video, I needed to upgrade from Maverick. So I upgraded from Maverick to Natty, and I was prepared to go to an Eric, but fortunately it worked okay in Natty, so I've got a bit more time to test out.
How long did this take?
It took most of an evening to run the upgrade process. And I've even got a local mirror, so it wasn't the downloading, it was just the installing. I mean, I've got... Okay, it's quite old now, but it's a 2.2-gig dual-core CPU and 6 gig of RAM and SATA disks of sufficient quality. Yeah, it seems to take forever to do the upgrade, and I don't know quite what the problem was.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I think that should be enough for
it. File a bug.
Yeah, the voice of sympathy there.
Alan, what have you been doing other than stuffing your face with cake and trying to get on Wi-Fi?
While I'm stuffing my face with cake.
He looks like a hamster.
A very big hamster. Well, and lovely cake it is from the co-op.
It's very nice.
Lemon,
cake.
What is it?
Lemon cupcakes with blobs of lemon curd in the middle.
Oh, man, they're so good. Ubuntu One. So in my past life, before I worked for Canonical, I used to use Dropbox and SpiderOak because I have a Windows machine at work and Ubuntu at home and the Mac in the kitchen, and I needed to keep files synchronized wherever I was, and Ubuntu One was only available on Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, I work for Canonical, basically every machine I touch runs Ubuntu, and if it doesn't, then it will do very soon.
We call that the Shuttleworth touch.
Can't comment. So I've basically been using Ubuntu One a lot more than I ever was before.
Have you been liking it?
Kind of, yeah. But there's some things I miss from Dropbox, most notably the LAN sync. Like previously, I was complaining that Dropbox doesn't work. Ubuntu One doesn't work via a proxy.
Yeah.
And now I don't have a proxy. I'm less bothered about that. And I'm more bothered about the fact that it doesn't LAN sync to every new machine that I install.
Funny that.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about me?
Laura, how about you?
I've been writing the UPC Christmas Panto with Tony.
Oh, no, you haven't.
Oh, yes, we have. And finishing the quiz for this episode, so it's all about UPC, really.
Brilliant.
And you've been morally corrupt as well.
I've been morally corrupt.
Shame on you.
What is all this?
Yeah.
You have to look at the podcast comments.
Oh.
Yeah, check out the comments for the last episode.
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember that.
Mark, how about you?
I've been having fun and frolics with PHP and PDFs, trying to get one to generate the other.
Just how much fun can you have with PDFs?
A surprising amount, although it does get a bit tiresome when you've worked through your third PDF library to get the result that you want.
Which is a PDF, presumably.
Well, it's a particular PDF with tables doing particular things. Merged cells aren't very easy to do in PHP, let's put it that way.
Right. But did you get it working?
I did.
Excellent. Well done.
So, shall we get on with the show?
Okay.
Yeah. We know what we're doing, honestly.
Yep. We're going to have a quiz.
Hooray! Yay.
And it's another installment of Podbusters. Thank you, Tani. And we have a board, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to keep track of who was winning. And it's on the webcam, which Alan has just frantically set up with some help from Mark, I think. And you should be able to see it at the podcast website. So it's podcast.ubuntu-uk.org/webcam.
That's exactly right.
Wow. That works, does it?
Anybody who's listened to this recorded, you won't be able to see
it. You might
it anyway.
See some archived pictures of the various stages.
Yes, we'll try and...
But those of you watching live will see the action as it happens. So I'm sure you're all on the edges of your seat.
Action. Refreshed periodically.
You may also see a cat walk by.
If you're lucky. Okay, yes. So we have two teams. I'll just sort of review the rules. We have two teams. And the current leader of the quizzes is Tony. He is on the team on his own.
Okay.
So he goes the shortest distance, top to bottom or bottom to top.
Okay.
With the white blocks on the board. And Alan and Mark are the blue team. So you've got to work together.
All right.
So you're going left to right, right to left. So the first player picks a letter and gets a question. If they're correct, they get the letter and they play. Then the player moves to the other team. And we'll do the rest if it happens.
Or pad to fill.
Okay. Right.
So, let's play Podbusters. Oh, thank you. Go on.
That's fine.
Okay. So, Tony, as you're on the team on your own.
Okay.
Pick a letter.
I will go with the letter X, please.
Scroll down. Okay. What X is a computer company that holds a royal warrant from the Queen and Princess of Wales? Prince of Wales.
What? Say that again.
What X is a computer company that holds a royal warrant from the Queen and Prince of Wales?
I'm trying to think of a British computer company that begins with X. I'm not looking at IRC. pass. I have no idea.
Can we steal it? Can we steal it?
Yeah. Go on.
Is it Xerox?
Yes.
Oh. Well done.
Right, so you actually get that block in this version of the game.
In this special version of the game, designed to make me lose.
Maybe.
Excellent.
Okay, so webcam people, you should see a new block appear.
When Tony's connection allows a picture to be uploaded.
It's all right, because by the time the delay of this audio has reached you...
Oh, that's true.
It'll all be seamless.
Yeah, perfect. It's like we planned it.
Yeah.
Okay, so blue team, what letter do you want?
You can pick the first one, Alan.
Which way are we going? Diagonally? Or
left to right or right to left?
Let's choose Z. Or Z.
No, hold on. Can we choose Z? Don't we have to choose?
You have to choose one of the letters.
Yeah, one of the letters that's touching the blue sides.
Do you have to do the ones touching? Oh, do you?
Yeah, because we have to work.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure we do.
I'm not too worried. No, I'm not too worried about that. Right. Go with Z.
Should we go with D?
All right, then.
D?
What?
D? Because it's touching the side.
All right.
On the left. D.
Oh, I see.
I understood that was how it worked.
I'll have a D, please, Bob.
I didn't check that bit of the rules. Okay. What D was a Cambridge research project to enter text without a keyboard?
I know this.
What's your question?
Dasher.
Yay!
Oh, is that the one where the letters fly at you? And
you
have
you
to
zoom
like...
up and down to pick the letters. It's really cool. It's good fun.
Yeah,
and useful as well.
And I knew that one.
No, you didn't.
I did.
Okay, so Tony, your turn.
Okay.
I'm just going to alternate.
I'll go with L then, please, Laura.
Okay. So, what L became the first personal computer released to the public with a graphical user interface?
The Lisa.
Yep.
You off the blocks already. Okay, mind you don't knock the high-tech camera suspension device.
Can someone keep an eye on it that I've not knocked the board out?
I'm keeping an eye on it, don't worry.
Yeah.
Okay, Alan and Mark, pick a letter.
Your turn.
I will go with...
I love the way that you're looking at the picture on your laptop on the board and not the board that is right
there's
in front
a camera
of
suspension device in the way of that.
Okay, yes.
AKA a chair.
I will go with W.
Okay. What W is the international community that develops standards for the web?
Do you want the full name or the common abbreviation?
If it starts with a W and it's correct, it's fine.
The World Wide Web Consortium, or W3C.
That's fine. Thank you.
Awesome.
I'm glad I chose that one.
We're playing dirty tactics now, Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Tony, you'll go.
I have to go with B, aren't I?
So, okay. What B is billed as the birthplace of modern computer?
Bletchley Park.
Yay.
Hold on.
Hooray. And for more news about Bletchley Park, keep listening to the show.
Okay, Mark and Alan.
Oh, yes. We're blue again, aren't we?
Yeah.
Let's do Z. Z.
Z. Okay, what Z or Z was the cloud-based office suite that you can optionally integrate with the Ubuntu desktop so that you don't need full office suite installed on your netbook. That might be slightly out of date now. This was written the first time round.
I'm reusing your questions, I see.
Some of them was, yes.
Is it by any chance Zoho?
It was indeed.
Okay, I'm glad you knew that.
Did you know that, Tony? Did you?
I thought it was Zimbra, which is what Mark was going for, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, and you mouthed it, and he could see. He could have stolen that if I was wrong.
I'd have got it wrong, though.
Oh, yeah. In another universe, you might have got it.
Another universe. Tony could lip read so well.
Okay,
you'd be surprised at what I can do. S, please, Laura.
What S did IBM donate to the Apache Software Foundation earlier this year?
Ooh.
S. Say source code.
Sausages. What S did IBM do? Andy Piper's there, probably shouting at me.
So you're going to say Andy B3. Piper there? You're going to give S?
He does in some dictionaries.
Is there a time limit?
When we get bored.
I'm going to have to pass. I can't think of it.
Okay. Alan, and you're not allowed to search for it.
I'm not. I'm posting on Facebook. Sorry.
Oh, fair enough. Alan and Mark.
What was the question?
What S did IBM donate to the Apache Software Foundation earlier this year?
Oh, the thing that goes with OpenOffice. Symfony.
Yes.
Yeah. Tony's up for a fight. It's good job the webcam's not pointing in Tony's direction.
Ah.
Getting undressed for a fight over here.
He's rolling up his sleeves. Okay, Mark and Alan.
Hello. I will have a V, please.
Okay. What V is
going
used to describe the different releases of a piece of software?
Would it be the version?
Yes.
Really? That's a question.
They're a mixture of easy and hard. It's just potluck to you which ones you get. I can't fix
this.
He's
a very bad loser, isn't he?
Yeah.
That might be the wrong colour.
That might be the wrong colour, in fact. I like the way you kept quiet about that one.
I'm too busy sulking.
Okay. Tony.
G, please.
Okay. What G dumped Linux for Windows XP earlier this year?
What?
Sorry, this is another hard one.
Is it? There's a surprise. Which G? The government.
Close. It was.
That's
jaunt.
Rot. Let me.
No, that's a clue.
Are we? Are we allowed to steal? What G switched from Linux to Windows XP? Why would someone do that?
Yeah, Alan's just stuck on that point.
Yeah, sorry, you lost
no.
me. Gendarme? Is that spelled with a G? I don't know.
Yeah, that's spelled with a G.
Germany? No.
That's at least two guesses.
Yeah.
Okay, it's the German Foreign Office.
Oh.
That's what it was named as in the article. Seems fair.
Okay.
Okay, ooh, nobody got that one. So.
Hang on.
So you haven't got another question with a D?
I haven't got another. There's no way I was doing more than 26 questions.
So G is now dead to us.
Which might mean that there's no way
you can still win.
No, okay. You totally need to go for P.
Yeah. Okay.
I should have...
P, please, Laura.
You want a P?
I'll have a P, please.
Okay. What P was the name of the spacecraft that landed on Mars in 2008 and was finally declared dead in May 2010?
Oh, God.
Any ideas?
We absolutely have to get this because there's no way for... It's not a Pioneer, it's a...
Oh, was this
the British one or the no, the American ones? There's two American
with the
ones.
The two ones where one and then yes. the other.
They were like, yeehaw names. Like Hope and Phantasmagorical or whatever the other one was.
Pope beginning with P. Hope and Pope.
Oh. Oh, I don't know.
No.
I have to guess it. Pioneer? Sounds.
Come on.
What did you say? Pioneer? No, Pioneer's the old ones from the 70s, isn't it? Voyager and Pioneer and all that. God, I was at NASA like 3 weeks ago. Why do I not remember this?
Okay. We're going to have to pass it over to Tony.
I'm going to say Pioneer.
No.
Oh, dear.
Because that's all I can think of.
It's the Phoenix Mars Lander.
Phoenix?
As in
begins with an F.
As in the Mars Phoenix Twitter account.
Yeah, all right.
Obviously.
Clearly. Okay, well, that's completely...
That's banjacks just about everybody.
No, we're all right.
If we can get A and J.
At this point, I can't
you
win.
You can't win.
No.
But you can block us.
Oh,
that's
good.
True, you can stop them winning.
Yeah, that's my mission in life.
You do it every other week.
Well, this is it. I mean, yeah.
All right.
Okay, so...
It's my turn, isn't it?
Yes.
Good.
Pick a letter.
Pick O. O's quite a good letter.
R.
Yeah.
Okay, what R is the third essential freedom of free software?
Redistribute.
Yep.
Wow. Ooh. What are the others?
Beards. Open-toed sandals.
Right. You're right.
Right, I guess then that we're going for A?
Mm-hmm. What A was the name of the inventor of the subroutine?
Ada Lovelace.
Yep.
Yes!
Oh, what?
Ooh,
unlucky.
It's getting intense.
Go on, Tony.
How does it work? If they win, who
we
gets
win.
The points?
We do.
One each. Oh.
Yeah, they'll get one each.
Okay. Let's go with T, please.
What T was updated by an astronaut from space last year, marking the extension of the internet into space?
Was it Twitter?
It was.
Ooh. Right.
Oh, it is getting tense.
What do we reckon J is? Ooh. Do we reckon J is JDK, Java, Jaiku?
You can't guess the word.
Guess the answer.
Score, what do you want?
What should we go for?
Let's go for J.
J.
Okay. What J is the Java-based editor for OpenStreetMap?
Oh. Oh.
Oh. I know. Is it?
Oh, I do know this.
Come on, it's not something like J.
How long do they get, is it?
It's not JOSM.
Oh, JOSM.
Is it JOSM?
Yes, JOSM.
Yes.
Yes!
Oh, we win!
Oh, you have.
What a terrific victory that was.
Well, it was a more interesting game than last time.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, that's quite a complex board.
It is.
And I have to say, bang on time as well.
Well done. Oh, how's that?
Thank you for all the effort you've gone through there 6 months ago.
Yeah. Well done, Alan and Mark.
So this does make it quite interesting because it means that Mark's got a point.
Yeah.
And it means that as we go into the last round, which Alan will be hosting, the last round of quiz in the next episode, Alan will be hosting that. And it means that Mark could equal with me over the whole series.
What wacky point scoring system I devise for next time.
Still only 1 point for
that's
a win.
True.
It's like the Grand Prix. Just call me Sebastian Vettel.
So is it celebrity pod squares next time?
I haven't figured that out, actually.
Okay.
We'll see.
Right, well, you do that. Let's have the news.
Yes, indeed it is. Time for the news. Open source developer Richard Hughes has launched the Color Hug, an open hardware tool for automatically calibrating your screen's color profile. The project required 50 pre-orders to make the initial run viable and has already received over 100.
Yeah, this is quite interesting to somebody who's into sort of photography or design or something like that. I had a look at it and couldn't quite work out how to get hold of one, but I saw you'd already bought one anyway, so...
Well, I've pre-ordered, which is basically just like sending him an email telling him you want one.
Yes, but good on him. It's their expensive little devices otherwise.
Yeah, and proprietary as well.
Yes, this is true.
Yes.
Ilya Zatorsky, the co-founder of the Diaspora Open Social Network, has died, sadly, at the age of 22. Memorials were held this week in San Francisco and Philadelphia and were streamed online.
That's very sad.
Yeah, it's always sad when somebody from the open source community passes away.
Especially so young as well, yeah, 21. Yeah.
But his project will stay on.
It's been 40 years since the 4004, I don't know how people said it back then, Intel's first microprocessor went on sale. The 4004 had a 4-bit word length and ran at 740 kilohertz. By comparison to its 2300 transistors, today's Intel chips have about 2 billion. We've come a long way.
Mm. I wonder how long it would take to upgrade from Maverick to Natty.
I actually remember having those at college. Intel 4004s in the little tray. They were revered.
And they were worshipped like gods.
Yeah. I'm not that old.
So Michael Meeks has blogged about a new Visio importer for LibreOffice 3.5.
Ooh,
that's
yes.
quite a good idea.
So you're going to be able to edit Visio
I think eventually,
documents.
Yeah, because that's one of the killer apps, isn't it, on Windows. Loads of people use Visio, and it's just, you know, there's just no alternative. Well, there's DIA, or DIA, or whatever you want to call it. Hmm. And I'm pretty sure there is a KDE one called KVivio.
Quite possibly.
But I don't know how well that's meant to. But I don't think that either of those can import Visio files. Hmm. Nothing can open Visio files. So this is a great step forward.
Yeah.
The source code for Android 4.0.1, codename Ice Cream Sandwich, yes, really, has been released. This is the code that we're running on the Galaxy Nexus and includes all the code added in the 3.0 release.
Excellent. Have you installed it yet?
No.
Okay.
I haven't got any Android devices.
On your Apple phone, can you?
No.
I have looked and nobody seems to be making one upgrades for the Hero anymore.
Yeah, good luck with that.
So I'm stuck on whatever I'm stuck on. At least I now have a rubber sleeve for it from Alan.
But at least now that the source code has been released, there's been a lot of delays on that. Yeah. At least now all the, you know, the homebrew communities can start building images for, you know, any of the old phones, like you say, that don't
HP
get
tablets.
Updates. HP touchpad. Mm. That would be nice. Yeah.
Google has put up $100,000 to save some papers related to Alan Turing's works at Bletchley Park during World War II.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
The guy who did it, some manager at Google, is actually British, so he knew about it already. And he managed to raise $100,000 over the weekend.
Was it from Google corporately, or...?
I think it was... he started with Google.org, but after that it was... it was just... I don't know. I assumed it was all from that.
Cool. Didn't you see the documentary about the other code breakers at Bletchley or some of the other things they were working on? It was on BBC4 a couple of weeks ago. It's probably still on iPlayer. It's worth checking out.
No, I missed that.
It's about Tunny, which is the harder of the encryption things to break. But it was a very, very good documentary.
Cool.
Check that out.
And now we have some events.
Yes, and the first one is the Ubuntu UK Loco are having a Christmas stroke seasonal stroke December stroke non-denominational event.
December
Winterval, yes, event. And we're going to Don Le Noir.
Oh, cool.
Restaurant in London where it's pitch black and you don't get to see what's going on. But you get to eat food, so...
Yay.
With your fingers, because nobody can see.
And having... Is there no cutlery either?
Yeah, there's cutlery, but it's easier to eat with your fingers and nobody can see.
It is a restaurant, one might say, designed for the members of the Ubuntu UK.
Well, they eradicate smell as well.
It is strongly smelling food.
And Dev8D, the JISC Developer Happiness Days, are happening on the 14th to the 16th of February 2012 at the University of London Union in London, which is fun.
You go to these, don't you?
I go to these. Basically, it's a 3-day free event for academic developers to sit around and work on cool stuff and learn stuff and drink a lot of coffee and eat a lot of snacks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Are you going to this one?
I'm definitely going to this one.
Excellent. And that's all the events.
it's time for the command line love. So we've got a command line love from Graham Bleach, who pointed us at Spark, which is a command line graphing tool, and also Spark Ping, which is a GUI for the ping command, which is actually some kind of ASCII rendering of the ping sort of response.
Oh, I saw him paste the response in IRC the other day. And it gives you a little bar chart.
Yes, that's the one.
So although it's tied into a ping command, there's a command line one called Spark that you can pipe anything through. So anything that produces statistical output of some kind. So he was using it for graphing commits by particular developers. So you could have a little graph on the command line.
And the graph is not like made up of lots of ASCII characters. It's one line of ASCII characters, isn't it?
Yeah.
Unicode characters.
Yeah,
probably.
It must be Unicode, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you've got your UTF-8 goodness enabled on your console, which you should have, then yeah, you see a nice little single line graph.
That's cool.
And then of course you combine it with Alan's favorite command, watch.
Oh man, yeah, I like the sound of that.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's quite early days. I think it's only been around for a week or two, but it's up on GitHub, so you can get hold of it and experiment with it. I'm sure they'll be welcoming of patches and things as well.
That's awesome.
I think it's Python. Yeah, have a look at that and see if you can find something novel to graph on the command line. Send us your best graphs.
And we'll put them up in our graph gallery.
Mark, you now got to write. You've now got to write a graph gallery. And that's the end of the command line, love.
And now it's time for our second interview that Tony and I did at Home Camp 4. This time it's with the lovely guys from the Open Energy Monitor Project, who came all the way down from Wales, North Wales.
Yep, they're very Welsh.
And to talk about their project.
Okay, we're here with Tristan Lee and Glyn Hudson of the Open Energy Monitor Project, openenergymonitor.org. They're at Home Camp 4, and you've come along to demonstrate your project. What is it, basically?
Yeah. Okay, well, the Open Energy Monitor Project is a project to build open source energy monitoring tools for monitoring energy use in buildings. So clips on where the electricity comes in. So you have a sensor node, sends that data wirelessly to a base station, uploads it to the internet, you can then visualize it online. You also have a graphical wireless display. It's all open source, and you can find out about it online on openenergymonitor.org.
Well, how did you come to start the project? What inspired you?
Yeah, well, I was in my last year of university, and really interested in sustainability to start with. How do we use energy more effectively? How can we generate energy from sustainable sources? And I wanted to be able to understand and to see how much energy I was using and see any changes. That if I made any changes at home, I'd like to be able to see that the effect of switching that light off. And then at the same time, I'd just come across the whole open source movement and open source hardware, open source software. I think I came across Arduino and Ubuntu about the same time. And it's just amazing to see that people were coming together and collaborating on a project and, you know, not keeping it all under their own, sort of protecting it and so on, but it being an open source shared thing, I thought that's amazing. So it was those two things that got me thinking, right, I'd like to get involved in this movement and contribute something.
And how about you?
Yeah, so I did a degree in electronic engineering, and I lived just a few miles down the road from Tristan. We've always known each other since we were very young, really. And while I was at university studying electronic engineering on a very sort of theoretical level, I was getting all these kind of emails and blog posts from Tristan. He was working on this awesome project, and it was all kind of open source. And he's like, "Oh, you got to come home and kind of work on this with me. It'll be awesome." So. And that's what I did, really. And so I've been working on the hardware side of the project. So kind of taking the circuit designs that Tristan had been working on and putting them into like PCB form, making it really easy for people to kind of get involved, breaking down the barriers to entry, really, for people to set up their own open energy sort of monitor system. And more recently, that's been branching out to making a kind of graphical LCD display, almost kind of product design in a way. So it's getting to the stage where you something you might be you'd like to have on your wall in your living room, nice plywood, laser cut fascia. But at the same time, all being open source and documented up online.
Quite a few people who are listening might have heard of things like a current cost, which is something you plug into your meter and it shows you your electricity usage, how much you're using, how much you're having to pay. So how does Open Energy Monitor differ from that sort of application?
Well, it's very similar in a way. It monitors energy in the same sort of way, gives you a real-time feed. But at the time we started the project, there wasn't any, if a lot of energy monitors on the market that were web connected. So that was something that we did quite early on, and we really worked on doing the web visualization side of things to make that very powerful. I guess the main difference is that it is open source. So if after a while you'd be monitoring your own energy, you decide you want to monitor the temperature in every room of your house, or control your boiler, or something like that. That's because it's all open source hardware, and we've designed it with expandability and hackability in mind, so to encourage people to do those sorts of things.
So people can take it from going just monitoring to actually controlling and interacting?
Yeah, we're very keen for it not to seem like a black box, like when you buy a current cost or whatever. You're not encouraged to open it up, tear it apart and change the software on it. Like, that's something that we really want to encourage, really. To make a nice sort of polished end-to-end energy monitoring system, at the same time encourage people to like hack it and change it around and stuff.
So do you publish just the specification for other people to build, or do you actually sell or provide the actual physical boxes?
So we provide all the documentation and all the kind of circuit layouts and firmware and software. So if someone wanted to, they could go away and from that build the system. But then we also provide kits with all the components and the printed circuit boards and the cases and everything you need really to set up the full system. So if you wanted to sort of shortcut a step in the process and just sort of kickstart your energy monitoring system, that's the easy way to do it.
Save yourself a lot of soldering.
Yeah.
So, and have you got a community that's growing around Open Energy Monitor?
Yeah. It's sort of been growing gradually from strength to strength over the last 3 years since I started the project, and there's now about 450 users signed up, and lots of questions and discussions, and some really good people started documenting the systems that they've been building. There's a guy who's built a solar PV monitor which will then divert energy from the solar PV to certain dump loads, to his immersion heater and so on. He's documented that online. There's another guy who's done a water meter implementation using the MontiX, so doing water metering. So
using one of your little boxes, he's customized it to do something that you never really intended it to do in the first place.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic, because we were wondering about water metering ourselves, and then to have someone else write it, we can and sort of recommend different sensors and so on. It really, you know, that really helps us. Yeah.
That's the really exciting thing about open source hardware and software. People might take it and use it for something that we never imagined it would be used for. And then it's really exciting when we get a new post up on the site and someone's sort of taken our design and has rolled it and built something on top of it, or used it for something we hadn't conceived.
So what sort of software have you used for designing the boards and designing the whatever is the code that you distribute with the AMON boxes?
The system is based on Arduino, so it's all the Arduino sort of firmware is all the it's all Arduino sketches, and you can get all that on our GitHub account. Then on the other side, you've got the web-based software, and that's a PHP, MySQL, JavaScript, jQuery application, and that's also downloadable from
Yeah. And all the hardware documentation is up on Solderpad, which is a relatively new, it's kind of like a source forge for open hardware designs. Mm. It's relatively new at the moment, but it's improving all the time, and it's a real easy way to kind of share schematics and let people look at the designs. And the actual designs themselves are in EagleCAD format, which is, it's not open source, but it's a free download so people can easily access the designs.
And is this a commercial thing for you guys? Would you like it to be if it isn't?
Well, there's two parts to it. So as it's sort of something you see with a lot of open source projects. There's Open Energy Monitor is the non-commercial knowledge commons. It's a shared resource between lots of people. And but we're setting up a business called Megni. To sell the kits and also do installations of energy monitoring systems. And then Megni is separate from Open Energy Monitor. But it uses Open Energy Monitor designs and contributes to Open
the
Energy Monitor.
Mutual relationship between them.
Yeah, but it means that, it also means that any other organization or business who wants to that we could share around that knowledge commons and I guess how a lot of other open source projects do it. So we don't want people to feel it's not like our commercial company's community site. It's a knowledge commons.
It's independent of that.
Yeah. So it's not. It has its own goals, as it were. It's not for our gain.
So other companies could also implement the sorts of solutions that you've designed for commercial gain themselves, based on the open source core of it, if you like, and put themselves in competition with you.
Yeah.
Now, when I say it like that, it doesn't seem like such a good idea.
Well, what we'd hope is that any of the companies who get involved would be also contribute to the community design. Contribute designs, improvements, and so on. So it would be very much a mutually beneficial thing.
And you guys are based in Wales, is that right? Are there any particular challenges to sort of energy monitoring out in the wilds of Wales, if you're not on mains gas and things like that?
Yeah, very much so. We've recently been running a community energy project with a local community in North Wales, where we've been looking at how much energy everyone uses in their lives, from electricity to driving to heating. And it's very apparent that there are specific challenges that the area faces because of not mains gas, older stone construction properties. The heating demands can often be like very, very high and very costly. So that's like a problem which is, well, it's not unique just to North Wales, but it's a different thing than you might encounter here in London.
So this is a scheme you've been going to install your hardware in a number of houses in your area, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. As well as installing our energy monitoring hardware, we've also been doing energy audits to look at how much energy they use for their heating and driving and so on. But the energy monitor gives us like a live, real-time electricity feed, like, as well as making it engaging for the participants. They have a web dashboard they can look at. It also allows us to infer from that data what percentage of their electricity use goes towards their base load or their fridge or electricity they use in other parts. So they can see straight away where their power is going, really.
And what sort of response have you had from them?
Yeah, it's been very interesting. Like a lot of these people, like, electricity by its nature is a very invisible kind of thing. So sometimes it can be quite enlightening to realise that, like, an appliance tucked away in their house they hadn't really thought about was actually like using more power than they thought. So quite a few of them are starting to make changes in their homes, like, sort of based on that they hadn't sort of appreciated before.
And is this something you'd like to do on a bigger scale, or is it just kind of a test ground for what you've done so far?
Well, we saw it very much like a pilot project in a way. It was a good way for us to test the energy monitor on a bigger scale. And also just to kind of see how it goes. We're still in progress. We're still analysing the results. So based on how it turns out, it'd be something that we think it would be really beneficial for other community groups and people to carry this out. And we may be making these set of tools we see them as like open source tools to allow people to monitor and audit their energy. So it'd be awesome that other people kind of pick them up and use them as well.
And what's next for Open Energy Monitor as a project? What do you see coming in the future?
The main thing we have been working on is this end-to-end energy monitor system. So we've got a bit more work to really polish that up, and there's some work to be done with improving documentation.
What's an end-to-end system encompass?
That's the energy monitoring sensor node, which you clip on to where your electricity comes in, your base station, your the eMonitor LCD, which is the wireless display, and the web side of things. So the really main focus is to really polish that up and then continue to encourage improvements and contributions from the community.
And I guess the main thing coming up is the beginning of next year, we aim to open an online shop to sell these kits, this end-to-end system, to other enthusiasts, to anyone else who might be interested in setting up their own system. So.
And are the kits themselves quite hackable? If people want to take them apart, can they do so?
Yeah, that's exactly what they've been designed in mind. I mean, people can use them just for doing a simple energy monitoring system, but then all kind of the technical ports and everything you need to add in new functionality, they're all broken out. So we want to make it as easy as possible for people to kind of add new functionality to it and use it for the things.
That sounds like an excellent idea. And it's openenergymonitor.org, is that right?
Yes, and we're on Twitter as well. It's at openenergymon.
Okay.
And we develop on Ubuntu.
And you develop on which we like.
Excellent.
Which means you're a good project. Thanks very much indeed for talking to us.
Thank you.
And it's time for the bit about Ubuntu.
Yes, it is.
Ecosphere.
Cheryl?
I'll say nothing. I'm a reformed character.
Oh.
And the kernel team have called for testing of a new kernel pack provided by Matt Garrett, which is to address some of the power issues which have cropped up in recent versions of the kernel.
Mm.
Not anger management issues, then, which is what you might expect from Matt Garrett.
He's a lovely man. So, yeah, he developed this patch for something to do with PCI power management. And, it's the Ubuntu kernel guys put a wiki page up to say, could you please test this kernel, which has that patch in it? And a load of people tested it. And on the whole, generally, some people found improvements, better battery life.
Brilliant.
Because there were sort of, what's the word? Backward steps.
Mm.
Regressions,
that's the word.
What R stands for, yeah. in recent kernel versions where it seems that Linux has been using more power than certainly its competitors.
Yeah. Well, let's hope this gets integrated and people keep finding lots of these little ways in which to improve performance.
Mm, excellent.
As part of Ubuntu Open Week, Ask Mark, that's Shuttleworth, will take place on Wednesday the 23rd of November, that's tomorrow, as we're recording this.
Or earlier today, if you're listening to the download straight away.
Or yesterday. In the #Ubuntu-classroom channel on Freenode.
Yeah, and George Castro has put out a bunch of tips for if you want to ask Mark questions. You know, he doesn't work on the distro directly, so don't ask him when will my patch be integrated or when will this bug be fixed or something like that. You know, ask him better questions. And also have a look at some of the old questions that were asked in previous sessions.
Make the most of it.
Exactly, yeah. You've got a chance to sit there and ask him questions, ask him good ones.
I have a lot of involvement with the design stuff, so if you've got any questions about that.
Unity, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And also, since his announcement we're watching in a minute about TVs, tablets and phones, might be worth asking him a bit about that.
Mm, well, we look forward to hearing about that.
Mm.
Why don't you tell us about that now?
Oh, yes, look. So, yeah, after his recent announcement about Ubuntu running on phones, tablets and TVs, by Ubuntu 14.04, which someone's put Terrific Tiger edition.
Tony Tiger.
Well, yeah. Discussion lists have been launched and IRC channels to engage with the community and get some input on what these platforms might look like.
So this will be Ubuntu running on these things, TVs, phones, tablets.
That's the idea, yes.
Okay.
At the moment, it's just exploratory, you know, figuring things out. Once Mark says something like that, we kind of...
Mark says something and then lots of other people run away and do it. And
yeah,
I think that's figure it out.
Lots of other people post comments about it.
And, well, the idea is, with these lists, is to, you know, get people's feedback about what they think should be in an Ubuntu TV and what features should be there and, you know, what matters most. And the same goes for the phone and tablet as well.
So everybody's probably quite familiar with what a tablet operating system does and quite familiar with what a smartphone operating system does, although we have Android already, which is Linux-based. So what would a TV be? Is this a sort of like a media center type thing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could be a TV box or a TV itself.
Okay. Oh, right. Well, that's what I was getting at. Is it a TV?
I don't know.
Or is it
a big computer that sits in your living room?
I want a media box that completely seamlessly integrates with my Android phone.
Okay.
Right.
You mean with your Ubuntu phone?
Yes, with my Ubuntu phone, but also with Android, should I have Android?
Ah.
Yeah, I'd want it to integrate with iOS.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, in the same way that iOS integrates with Apple TV.
Apple TV, yeah.
Yeah.
But not
iOS. It would make sense. I mean, some of the suggestions that people have been making is to have an experience where you have a tablet or a phone in your hand and use that as a remote control for the TV device. Mm. Or you have a tablet and when something's on the telly, like a film or something, the IMDb shows up on the tablet or something, you know, so you can then drill down and look at other stuff. And then when you hit watch this film, that pops up on the telly or something like that.
It was just controlling music and things that I wanted to try the other night. And I was just like, I can't do it.
Well, there are remote controls already that exist for Android and iOS.
Oh, so you're just being sarky.
No, they do. I do. That's giving you real information.
You can get remote controls.
Yeah.
If you're running XBMC, you can get an XBMC remote on your phone.
Yeah.
Ubuntu is now available preloaded on Asus EPCs in Portugal.
Ooh. We're slowly getting there.
Yeah.
There's shops in China, shops in Portugal. Next stop, Tottenham Court Road.
Hey.
There was a press release that Canonical tweeted about with this, which unfortunately was in Portuguese. So rather,
what do you mean, unfortunately,
well,
to address the Portuguese market, you really need to speak in their language, don't you?
It was very appropriate for the Portuguese market. It was less appropriate for me, as I don't happen to speak Portuguese.
Planning on getting a plane to Portugal and buying a laptop, are you?
No, in because Portuguese. I won't be able to read the street signs.
It's fortunate this isn't the Ubuntu Portugal podcast.
Podcast, indeed. Yeah.
And Ubuntu One is dropping CouchDB, having found it unable to scale up and down to the project's needs. They will be developing their own database, currently called U1DB, to replace it.
Now, one of the things they always talked about with Ubuntu One is it's CouchDB. You can write any app that uses CouchDB and sync it up to Ubuntu One. And it's easy to do. But so I guess not anymore.
Is that how Tomboy works, for instance?
No, Tomboy is a bit different. They sync differently, but other apps, yes, could use CouchDB in the past, but not anymore.
Presumably they still can in an era. It's just going to go away from the next release, I'd imagine.
I think it's going away pretty soon. I think it's they're switching them off. There's like vast farms. I know in the past they had real trouble scaling this up to... And they had to spread like users across like loads and loads of servers to get any kind of decent performance. I remember talking to Elliot Murphy about that over a year ago. So, you know, they've clearly been working on that for a long time since then and still can't get it right. And scaled down to, the smaller devices like low power, netbooks and stuff like that. So it's...
And phones, maybe.
It's clearly been an issue.
Yes.
Yeah, in the future.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, you can already get some Ubuntu One services on...
Yes.
Yeah, that's Android, true. Yeah. So. But they probably don't use CouchDB, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know.
No, neither do I. So, yes, this is U1DB, which is not actually a database. It's an API to databases underneath.
Is it a NoSQL database
on top of... But that's the point. CouchDB was a NoSQL database, and they're kind of throwing that away and using, in inverted commas, real databases. Send your flames to Tony.
Hack won't be happy about that.
Well, he helped design U1DB, so he's very happy about that.
He will be happy about that.
Yeah, keeps him employed. His main goal in life.
Yes.
Excellent. And that's all in the bit about Ubuntu this time.
And now it's time for your feedback. First up, we have an email from Erwin van der Beesen in Holland about campaigning for open standards in education.
Dutch government wants to tie... I'll look at the webcam. The Dutch government wants to tie the country's schools to a single software vendor for years to come. Dutch students using free software or devices without Silverlight support will find themselves locked out of schools' online systems due to the use of proprietary technology and closed standards. We have a petition people can sign if they're interested in getting involved. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Excellent. It's not so different from what's been happening in the UK through the Building Schools to the Future programme, where clusters of schools, typically like a county or a large number of schools, have been signing up to single ICT vendors in their institutions as part of that scheme. So
is this to reduce costs or
yeah, it's
sort of standardisation or
a bit of both, mainly. Well, not so much cost, because it's at the time where there was lots of money. It was all kicking off. But the idea was, rather than having lots of individual support needs and contracts in place, you could save money by having one organisation provide the ICT across lots of schools. But of course, the side effect is you get, a very homogenous solution, which doesn't necessarily fit all needs and certainly removes some freedoms. We received these thoughts from Ian Pascoe, who's been reading about the next LTS version of Ubuntu.
I wonder if the way in which Ubuntu is going it alone in some of the core libraries and applications can be sustained over time. I can see that some of Mark's goals are the right way to drive the distro, to make it more acceptable to both commercial and private users, and some of the ways in which Ubuntu is diverging are being taken up by other distros. But can Ubuntu as a project really maintain all the necessary upstream project code to maintain itself?
So is this to do with the fact that it's going to be a 5-year LTS? On the desktop rather than just a 3-year.
I think he's also saying about where, I suppose, Canonical is now doing development more as well as just packaging stuff that other people are doing. Are they going to be able to support that over the 5-year cycle?
Like driving
as well?
The Unity thing.
Mm. Well, they're hiring like mad, I can tell you that.
That'll have anyone.
Barrels are well and truly being scraped, are they?
Well, they employed me.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it is a serious question. There's obviously a huge cost increase in doing that. The company's growing, which is great, but it is going to be a big burden. And the sort of bit rot sets in for some of these projects. And you think, well, if it was a bit of a hack, you might have put up with it 18 months in a normal release, but then you've got to put up with it for 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Then, you know, good luck if that's you.
Apparently, the Wing Commander's jokes made more sense to some people than they did to us. Floyd in Sydney, Australia, emailed...
The point of the joke, and I suppose the folding bicycle doesn't work either, which is a very old joke indeed, and Ubuntu with Unity is very obvious to those who have not enjoyed their experience with Unity. To those who have enjoyed it, the joke is truly obscure. It's a bit like religion, isn't it?
I don't know. That doesn't explain the joke. I still don't know. So I shall go and have a look up. A joke relating to folding bike.
And listen back to it. And
I can't find it.
I reckon Sladen will know.
Yeah. Yes.
And he owns a folding bicycle.
Yeah. If you Google folding bicycle and folding bicycle joke, you just got lots of offensive comments about folding bicycles.
Yeah. Actually, the very first time I rode my folding bike down to the shop,
it got nicked.
No, on the way back. A car went past, someone shouted out, "Get a proper bike!"
Aww.
Kind of glad it got stolen.
And Mike Chaplinsky emailed us to explain a bit more, apparently.
Actually, the WC's comparison of Ubuntu Unity with the botched Market Garden operation from World War II is rather spot on. In Operation Market Garden, whose initials are OMG, rather prescient, actually... The Allies seemed to pay attention to all the wrong details while neglecting a few fundamentals that ended up dooming the operation to failure. The analogy is that Canonical is concentrating too much on all the supposed cool stuff in Unity whilst neglecting the fundamentals and making changes for change's sake. I'll leave it to you to judge whether my ability to make sense of the WC's thought processes disqualifies me from having my own opinions taken seriously. That's a fine point. Yeah. Yes, you can read the Operation Market Garden Wikipedia page and not really understand its relevance to this, but I guess it was pretty much what he says there about an operation where...
I can completely see why people who don't like Unity and don't think it's the right direction to go can feel that we're putting too much focus on that part and not focusing all the other bits underneath all of that that might have problems.
Like power usage.
Power usage, yeah. And detecting devices and not flickering the screen when you boot the thing up, you know. All this kind of stuff. There's a lot to a desktop,
But you could equally argue that for years and years and years, they've focused on those things and not on design and usability.
Mm. Yep.
And also, it's not like by having the people working on Unity, there isn't still a kernel team doing all of those things.
Yeah, and some of the people who work on Unity, like the designers and the OpenGL coders and the Compiz guys, they're not the kind of people who would work on the kernel or on, you know, hardware detection and stuff like that.
Maybe the kernel should be 3D rendered.
That way your GPU could do all the processing and free up your CPU for... Oh.
Genius.
For rendering the desktop. And finally, well, we received this message.
Marjorie Curmudgeon Swathergill here from the Kings Lynn Pony Rehabilitation Centre. But that's not why I'm calling. I believe you've been corresponding with my father, the Wing Commander. I think you should know he's run off to Stockholm with a 22-year-old blonde masseuse called Inga, whom he met over the internet, and it's all your fault. He was happily settling into his dotage through a haze of Mogadon and gin and tonics when he started listening to your blasted podcast and going online all hours of the day and night. The next thing I know, he's taking trips on the Orient Express and spending a fortune on Viagra. Now we know it's because of this Viking hussy.
I believe Vikings came from Norway, not Sweden, Marjorie.
Not now, Dennis. Well, I hope you're satisfied. You shall be hearing from the family solicitors forthwith. I've half a mind to come round with a pony whip and thresh the lot of you. Yours disgustedly, Marjorie Curmudgeon Fothergill. Oh, and if anyone would like to make a donation to the Kings Lynn Pony Rehabilitation Centre, you can find our address on the internet. Oh, blast!
Oh dear, I think we've upset her.
Whoops.
It's getting quite dark, isn't it?
Do we need to get legal representation, do you think?
I think, yeah.
For many reasons.
Horsewhip defence, that's for sure. Well, let's see what happens in the run-up to Christmas, I guess. But that is the end of your feedback.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you for listening. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including voicemail numbers and Twitter feeds, Facebook and IRC channels. Let us know what you think of it and give us your thoughts. That's the show.
Blah, 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 blah.
The show, not the website. Although you can let us know what you think of the website as well, because
then Mark will fix
it ourselves. And give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. Join us on Tuesday, 6th of December for our next live episode.
Well done, Mark, for making it through that. You made it through the rain, as it were.
Yes.
Is the next one the last one before Christmas?
No, we have two more before Christmas.
Yes.
And then we're taking a break?
And then we'll be off for a break for, a month or so, I guess, while we refresh and recharge our batteries.
Cool.
But we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.